Daniel Bunting. This recording is part of the oral history project carried out by the Suffolk Horse Society in 2013, with advice from Cambridge Community Heritage and a generous grant from the Heritage Lotteries Fund. In the recording, you will hear the voice of Mr. Daniel Bunting describing his memories of the Suffolk Punch Heavy Horse. Daniel is a current horseman and entrepreneur. The recording was made by Hilary Cadman, who was a member of the Suffolk Horse Society. The date of the recording was 9th of July 2013, and it was carried out at his home in Stoke-by-Nayland. The duration of the recording is about 33 minutes.
This is Hilary Cadman interviewing Daniel Bunting of Hawksley Park Suffolk Punches on the 9th of July 2013 for the Suffolk Horse Society Oral History Project. Good afternoon, Daniel.
Good afternoon.
Tell me, Daniel, where were you born and when?
I was born in Colchester in Essex, the Colchester General Hospital, in 1974.
And what was your education and what did you do when you left school?
My education was Saltershall, which was a small independent school to start with. And then I went to Ecclesall for people who were with dyslexia. And then I actually found I was good at something, which was sport and being outside. So I was very fortunate to get a place at Breedon in Gloucestershire, which is a farming school designed for people who are either in the army or dyslexic farmers, which I think is quite a lot of us. And there I could channel my energy into things that I was actually good at. One was playing rugby and two was farming. So I spent many a happy year from lambing to calving, and we had a proper working farm. And my highest grade was science, and I actually managed to get a B. Everything else I did a lot worse in, really. And then after that, I went to... I worked, actually, for a while, for about a year. And then I went to Rittal Agricultural College, and I studied commercial horticulture, because that's what the family business was, commercial horticulture. Absolutely hated it, because I actually knew what I was doing before I went to the thing, and I think I learned absolutely nothing at Rittal. So I had three other jobs when I was at Rittal, which gave me a bit of ability to do what I liked. I managed to get a very good sandwich place working for Hazelwood Foods as a manager in charge of 220 people. And that was where I had to cut my mustard, if you would say. And that was actually quite a nice experience. Then coming back to college again, and I couldn't wait to leave. So I got distinctions and everything, but it was probably about 1% of brain energy. And I think I probably learnt more when I was at school than I ever did when I was at Rittal.
You're part of a long-established Bunting family business based at Great Hawksley. Did your family have any interest in working with Suffolks, or is that something you developed?
So the family has been established since 1820. We're coming up for 200 years. In that time, we have done everything from silk importers to bulb importers, working in 20 different countries. We have had farms which will work with Suffolk Punches, and the last farm which actually had Suffolk Punches was at Wicks, and my great-great-grandfather was Hector Honeyball, and he was a horseman, and he actually started as a milkman and then brought a round and then actually brought a farm, and then built up to quite a large farming side of the business, really. When it came to the family, we got into Suffolk's because we went to the Suffolk Horse Spectacular at Kentwall Hall, and I believe it was in about 2000, probably a bit before 2000, and we sat and marvelled and watched and learned and listened, and I suppose we got a bit like a trout. We took a fly and we ended up getting hooked, line and sinker. And I suppose we watched Nigel and Cherry because they were the two which actually spoke to us. So I suppose lots of people come along and talk to you when you've got horses on the horse box, and you're never sure which is the wheat and which one's the chaff. And Nigel and Cherry and John Fleming and a few others were really, really nice. I think some of the people were very offish, and I suppose really it was a question, the people who were nice to us are the ones we went and spent time with. And then we in future, then we actually brought a pair of Suffolks for William Bruce, which we still have now. And they are 14 years old, and I brought them when they were 18 months old. And I was working this morning. Brilliant horses. We now have, I think we've actually had about 15 foals in our time. And we've had some 27 Suffolk punches in the last however many years. And I've tried to make it that we don't end up with old horses. We're always trying to change our horses on a regular basis. So if anybody asks me if you could buy a horse, I'll always say yes.
Can you describe the business that you've set up and where you acquired the relevant skills to do that?
Right. I suppose, like everybody, when you first start with Suffolk Punches, everybody talks about showing. And showing means, in my opinion, now after doing it for a few years, is you need a huge, huge pocket, which is endless, because you're going to have to keep putting £10 notes out of it. Unless you are very wealthy to start with, or you have a very good backer, it becomes very hard to do in the long term. So I had to think outside the box. So it was very much a question, we had our horses on livery, and then we wanted to get them back, and also had to reduce the cost, I suppose. And if they were miles away from you, you can't use them every day. Get them back, they're a lot easier than you think. And then you start thinking what you can do with them. And then we had a pub called The Anchor, which we've sold now. And that was a very good learning curve, working the horses down there and growing. Well, I think we had 110 different varieties of vegetables we were growing with horses. So they can be turned to huge variety of things. The things that didn't grow well were things like maize, the modern crops. But the old-fashioned crops grew really well. And then I found people were actually interested in how the horse functioned and worked. I started off with one or two shows, and now we are doing hundreds. So we're doing about 460 events this year. So that's more than one a day, and sometimes up to five a day. And the Suffolk is much more versatile than just something that you show in hand or you put in a dray. We use it for schools. I'm actually going to... at the moment, we're dealing with about 1,200 schools. And I go right up to Gourock in Scotland, down to Cornwall. And we are delivering a whole education package to schools. And it's about teaching them about the countryside and more. And really, we start with one in an area and we get snowboard and we get bigger and bigger and bigger. We also have tried to look at new markets for the Suffolk. That might be riding it, which we're going to have five of our mares doing it. That might be conservation work, which we've been carrying out very successfully. The largest site we cleared was 22 hectares. And I don't mean just go in there and pull a few logs about. I mean clear it. Telegraph poles, everything you could possibly imagine through to really dense undergrowth. So we brought the machinery to be able to do it, which is pulled by horses, and there's absolutely nothing left. So when we finish, we're down to 3 inch of what's left on the ground, and everything else has been removed. And the horses did it brilliantly. So this site was next British Telecom training ground. So they couldn't use powered machinery because you couldn't stop quick enough. And because the horses are verbal commanded and they're so accurate and you can stop them within an inch of each other, it meant that we could work with cables and wires and all over the place. And we've also done tree extracting timber, and they're very viable, right through to doing churchyard clearances, which I've got our contract next week. So the Suffolks will do everything from weddings to funerals, which I suppose is a common place, to picnics, to events. But the thing which actually pays is actually organising shows. So we go in with a show and we do a main ring attraction where people... you have to have very well-trained horses, you have to have well-trained staff, and you have to be able to live on budget. And you can't cause them grief. Like, I think we as Hoffman had done in the past. You've got to be on time, and it's not about you, it's about the event. And it took me a little while to understand that it's you are there to do a job of work. You're not there for a day out. So it's actually been quite a nice learning curve. So I worked out the other day, we are doing about 17 different things with the Suffolk Punches across the board. And that varies from doing the Lord's Maid's Parade to film work. And the film work is actually getting more and more, and I suppose it's old-fashioned things. And I suppose when I get older, I haven't even got over 40 yet, when I've got a bit of grey hair and stuff, I think that might become easier. But we do have to rent in older people to work the horses, because most of the time they want older generations. Which then builds onto your team. So you go out and try and take on a decent heavy horseman, you're going to struggle, unless he's going to pay the absolute fortune. So you have to build a team. And at the moment, I have a team of, I think it's 11 or 12 full-time members of staff, and I have two volunteers. And we bring enough work to be able to justify all their wages and pay for improvements. But it is hard work. And we don't just work with horses, we work with everything. Because in the winter, the work dries up, so you have to go and do something else. So it's very much a question of understanding when your season is and making sure that you can try and work the Suffolks the best you can and make sure everybody has holiday around it. So we started with apprentices, and all of our staff came as apprentices, and they worked on apprentices for an MVQ level 2, and then out of the apprentice they're doing MVQ level 3 in a heavy horsemanship. And with some of our staff, I would be pleased to say, are actually doing their degrees in heavy horsemanship now. I don't mean light horses, I mean heavy horses. Actually how you work, breed, everything. So we have the teachers that teach us, and doing your singles and pairs. And it's absolutely about a way of life and getting the youngster to understand it, which doesn't suit everybody. So there is quite a lot of blood. And you do get staff that don't make the grade, and you do have to try and choose the right people. Our oldest horseman is about 30 down to 16. And we have both, before you ask, but we have both male and female. And I don't really think it makes any difference if you're male or female, depending on what your attitude to work is. And the attitude, if you're going to have a Suffolk Punch, is you're not going to have much of a social life. You're going to have to work when everybody else wants to have the time off, which is Friday, Saturday, Sunday, bank holidays. You're going to have to work a lot longer than you've ever worked before. Twice last week I was up 3:30 because I had to get up to London to do a job, and then we didn't get back here till 10 o'clock at night. So you do need to be able to push the boundaries of what your body can take a bit. But the rewards are there, and it's getting people to understand the rewards are there. I think welfare of the horses, breeding horses, trying to find a market for the Suffolk Punch. And I don't mean just up and down in hand. I mean a horse which is absolutely bomb-proof market. I think the Suffolk has a very good future. But I think we need to work on its manners and making it more acceptable for people right across the board. So if it's a horse which somebody wants to do some pleasure driving, we shouldn't be down on it because they're not putting it in a dray. And we need to be an all-encompassing group who say, whatever you want to do with Suffolk, we'll support you. And that is what I've tried to do with our group. We have loads of training days here now. I've got a training day here today, actually. We probably have 3 or 4 people every week come in now. And we try and teach them in my way. So my way, Suffolk can do absolutely anything. I pulled artillery guns in water. So the horse has to swim through to funerals. It doesn't matter. The horse will do it because it trusts you. And it's a question of making sure you have the same way with all your people and want the horses to be part of your team, really. And you grow up with these horses. They're a foal one day, and the next minute they're a biting colt, the next minute they're a gelding or a stallion, and the next minute you're working them. But our head horseman, Chris Pratt, is actually working a pair of our stallions at the moment together, and they're ploughing. And they were out ploughing and harrowing. We just planted all game crops on the farm. Our intention is to cut them And there will be a pair of geldings which will be out next year, because then we can take them out to the general public. Because we need horses that we can have in front of the general public, much rather than horses which get hidden up behind a fence and never go out. Our horses would probably be on average 4 to 5 days a week they'll be out of this yard. So we need them everywhere, really.
One thing I just wanted to go back to, did you learn horsemanship at Rittle, or where did you learn your horse skills to start with?
Before Rittle, really, it was at Breeden. So we had a few ponies at Breeden. And I suppose a pony is the same as a horse. It eats, it poos, you lead it about. That's why sometimes I get people here and I try and explain to them they're not as scary as you think they are. Our Suffolks don't tread on your feet. You can put your feet underneath them and they won't tread on you. So I use the same... I learnt to show cows. And we were given, like most schools, you get those white jackets and you get a calf, and the calf butts you and kicks you and everything else. And I've learned the cow is similar to a horse, and you just try and get the horse and the cow to the same thing in your mind. At Rittle, I learned commercial horticulture, which is growing as many plants as possible, the cheapest possible, with the most amount of chemicals as possible. And that was really what I learned. And we were producing 2,500 tonnes of tomatoes a week. It's a massive amount. So nowadays, when we came back, it was quite a daunting thing when we decided to buy the horses. And we were very fortunate at that point to fall on Nigel and Cherry. And we learnt a lot from Nigel. And that's the day when he was really active and doing lots of stuff all over the place. That was, 15 years ago. So things have... And I learnt a lot from him, right through to how to put the harness on, through to how to muck out, and or not muck out in the way of Suffolks, and you just build the muck up. It was an interesting learning curve, and I suppose that's how we did it. And then really, when we got horses back here, it was trial and error. And then I thought it was very much more like we do with the sheep, because the sheep do what we want them to do, not the other way around. So it was more of a question, I think Suffolks is very similar to a... other animals, is a question of being calm, relaxed, gentle and repetitive. And if you do the same thing every day at the same time every day, it knows what it's going to do. A bit like my grandfather's dog always wanted its tea at 6:30. So we try and change the jobs, and we try and make the horse fed at different times, etc., so when we take them out we can use them. We use different horses. So some of our horses are taught to bow into wheelchairs, and they bow now, and they suffer punches and not 18 hands, and they'll put their heads down, and you just give them a command, and they go down. And there's 28 different commands we give to a pair of our horses now. And each of those commands you can put together in a sentence, a horse sentence, so it's come a step, back a step, together boys, whatever it is, they understand it. And I think it's actually more of a question of the horses... The horse understands, and it learns and listens, and it teaches you more than you will ever possibly imagine. And the more you do, and the more you relax, and the more you do it in a confined area, so you've got a nice big fence around you, so if it does go anywhere, it's not going too far. Just let yourself learn, and don't be put off. People are always saying, you know, I can't do that, it's going to kill you. Well, it might do, but if you don't try, you won't know. And then when you know it's safe, and you've done it 100 times, then you can go out and do it and then get the qualifications to go around it. I'm a huge advocate in qualifications, and I'm a huge supporter in any qualifications which is based around heavy horses. I think light horse qualifications are a total waste of time if you're going to take on a light horse person to work with heavy horses, because they have absolutely no idea. And the first thing you're going to do is you're going to have a fat, overweight horse that you can't control. So it is very much... trying to find the right people who want to work with your horses.
Talking about the qualifications, where do people go now to get the qualifications, and who produces these sort of tests for them?
Right, there is several colleges in the eastern region. We work with several of them. I won't say they're the better two, but the two that I've chosen to use at the moment, one is the Equine Academy, and they're based at Felstead. They're a small private college, and it was the best staff of Rittle leaving and setting up their own unit. And what they do is they're very good at producing NVQ level ones. MVQ level 1 is a basic knowledge in horsemanship. We have had several of our... you don't pay them for that stage. They come and they do 2 days a week. And it's a bit like being at school or on a placement, and they come 2 days a week. And then you can look at this whole bunch of people who come to your yard, and you can decide, oh, do you think I should offer them an apprenticeship? And you can see them over 6 months gaining their skills. And some of them are a bit like having a duff egg. You know, you know they're not going to ever going to make it in this industry, but you've learned over the last 6 months they're not. It's not like having to go and take somebody on from a job interview and work out they're going to be all singing or dancing when they're not. So some of them make the grade to be offered an apprenticeship, and we offer an apprenticeship up to the age of 25. There's funding to the age of 19, so if you can be lucky enough to find somebody under the age of 19, that's great. But if you can get them older, they're normally better. Slowed down a bit. At that stage, we normally do an MVQ level 2, which teaches your basic knowledge, and they actually have to learn all about the muscles, the structures, everything. And it's a very, very good qualification. You pay an apprentice wage at that point, and I normally decide to pay them a bit more than the apprentice's wage, because then you get better people, and they've got to live on that for 18 months. After that stage, then we decide that we want to offer them a further training, which then comes down to us having to pay for that training that time off, and they're on full-time wages. So having an apprenticeship is not cheap. It's actually cheaper not to have them, but it gives you better staff. And if you don't train your staff, you are what your staff are, basically. And if you're like me, and I concern myself as a bit of a commanding officer with all these little people around me, because sometimes we go to a show, the one we did at Rougham Airfield 2 weeks ago, we had 27 main ring activities a day. So each one of those is half an hour. So if it was Birds of Prey, or if it was whatever we were going to do, we had 27 things in the three rings that were there. So we are constantly on, and you have to be able to trust people to do that, because you've got two other rings when you're not in there. And you've got working areas, and you've got to build up that trust and confidence in people. And the ability to be able to talk to people is, for these youngsters, 19, 20, to be able to talk in front of... We did a show the other day with 90,000 people at. So 90,000 people is near enough the same as what a Suffolk show gets. And we stood there, and my young boys at 21 years old were talking and commentating, and it went, and the speakers went out to everybody. So I suppose it's quite a steep learning curve, but if you don't push them, they don't get there. We then decide, and normally at a later date, that they want to do an MVQ level 4, or further training, and we normally do that for 5 or 6 years later. We also do some management training, where it might be timesheets or some area that we're weak, and there's always some grant that you can get to help pay for it, because some of these courses are sort of £5,000-6,000, so you need to make sure that the government's got deep arms and you try and extract it off them. We also then do things like first aid certificates, we do driving certificates, and anything else that you listen and somebody's offering, then you accept it, really.
Very comprehensive.
We try our best to be. So, comprehensive it might be, but I think there's always room to improve. So one of the areas I'm looking at the moment is to actually bring somebody outside of our yard into our yard as more of a sergeant major. Because sometimes I think you get stale, and you need to bring somebody who comes in from a different background and whips the troops into line, really, because everybody wants to get better, and it's a question of how you get better. The main problem is when you've got young people coming through is you end up getting too many managers. We don't need many managers. What you need is a good structure and a career progression. And the other thing I've found is when you train most of them, they will want to stay with you. And even when they leave, they keep asking to come back. So I wish we could get more heavy horse centres, however you want to put it. I mean, we've been trying to build a centre in Great Hawksley for 12 years, and it's just absolutely so hard work to get the planning and and sort of heartbreaking, really, because you're spending all these millions of pounds trying to do something which you feel is right, and hopefully one day we'll have a centre that we can bring the general public to, and then there'll be people able to see what we've done in private, I suppose, and we can show people, and then we can really get the horses moving.
You appear to be a driven young man. How long is your working day, and what do you get involved in mostly?
Right, I work 7 days a week, which is probably like every single farmer, apart from an arable farmer that has to hold the winter off. I like to go on holiday, and we normally go on holiday a couple of times a year. But when you've gone away for more than a couple of days, you want to come back. So never more than a week. I like to go in even if I'm not on. So my partner is long-suffering. She always thinks that I've got a plan. If he's going to have a day off, I've got to plan it, so he can't go in. And it's always about taking you away, which is not really what you want to do, because you want to just sit on the sofa and sleep. I'm absolutely useless at getting out of bed. So I either get out of bed at 5:30, or I get up at bed at 8:00. I can't get up at 6:30. So normally I start earlier or start later. But what's happened with the work is most of the work is in the afternoons and evenings, which has meant that we don't normally sometimes get home till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, so don't really want to start 6:30. So it has a bit of a... So this week I'm going to London twice, next week I'm going 4 times. So working in central London with different animals. And we teach a lot now. You know, it's about what you've got in your brain and getting your brain out and extracting it and having this sort of joy of whatever you want to learn, just ask the questions. I have nothing to hide. I'm not somebody who wants to show horses, that wants to hide behind his horses and not tell me. If you want to ask me a question, ask me the question and I'll tell you what the answer is. If I don't know, I'll even make it up or ask somebody else or point you in the right direction. But I try and avoid things with conflict. And I want my yard and what we do to be different. And I don't like... I did like the competition. I did like winning things. But I didn't like the... I want to go across to something that can go anywhere, be accepted in one part of the showground to go and do displays or actually teach people. Not just there for your own public glory, teaching people. And it doesn't matter what it is or showing whatever. I want to have a future for the horse. And so we've dropped out of showing. The boys sometimes want to go and do a horse and let them go and do it on their own. But I wanted the competition side out. And I think the competition side has a lot to answer for. And the way it stopped the Suffolks. And I wish we could find some way that we could all go and show horses against each other, but nobody won. And we all became one huge, happy family of Suffolk horse owners that just parted knowledge on everybody the whole time. And then we could have a much happier place, really, because somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose. And the loser's going to think, I should have won. And the winner's going to think, down on everybody else. And I suppose that's really... what I try and not get in our yard. No winners, no losers, we're all part of a team. And if you fail, you fail the rest of the team.
And in 10 years' time, where do you hopefully see your business?
We're definitely getting more and more bigger contracts. So things like photography contracts, for magazines and books, through to much more conservation-based things. The answer, somebody rings you up, and we probably get 10 calls a week at the moment. Some of them you completely think, okay, well, it's strange, not going to do anything. And some of the things you think I'm interested in. A lot of people think you're going to do it for free. And then I always give the Suffolk Horse Society telephone number and they can give them a ring, and then somebody might want to do it for free. But it costs a lot to go out. It costs a lot every time we take a vehicle out. So if you see our yard, it's full of vehicles, full of machinery, full of everything that has to back you up. Our insurance is 28,000. So 10 million public liability. for what we do. So it's not, you couldn't have a small yard and do it. You need to get bigger and bigger. So when you're asking what we want to do, the answer is to go further, probably have satellite units based in Lancashire, maybe one in Scotland, maybe one down in Cornwall, that we share the contracts. I also farm work out to other people, but it's very difficult to find people that do it your way. So really it'd be a question of taking staff, putting the staff there, and then doing it backwards, especially with the school contracts, because the schools are getting much, much... Well, there's more and more work going to schools because of the transport cost and etc. My aim is to go to all 1,200 schools 4 times a year. So if I had that, if I could manage to do that, plus developing the shows, and I'd probably knock off things like the film work, because film work is so boring most of the time, because you're spending an awful lot of time. It sounds brilliant. Oh, I was in that film, I was in that. You were in there for 30 seconds. You were there for 3 weeks. The food is normally the same. It comes in like a little grey box, and you're thinking, great. But some of the things I like doing are sort of the documentaries, the short things, where we did last series of the One Show. The last time it was actually at a BBC Centre, and we were there when they closed the BBC Centre with our animals. And that was a good thing to do, because we got there and we had 3 hours and then we left. That was really good. But some of the other things you do, you're there. One of the jobs we did for a large, it was actually the Sainsbury's Christmas commercial, and we were there for a week. We weren't on it. So they paid us to be there for a week, and we weren't on it. And nor was any of the stuff that was there. But some of my other animals were. They used the stuff that I wasn't expecting to use. So you're not in command, and you're not in control. So I like to be in control. I like to develop it. I would like to... And some of the Suffolk owners probably wouldn't like this. I think I'm going to get some other heavy horses of other breeds. So we've now got some Frisians, which help us in teaching people to drive much easier than the Suffolk. So again, voice command, exactly the same commands as the Suffolks, but they're soft and they're really, really easy. So we now have got some miniature ponies, so we can train people to drive the miniatures. And there's no, you can make whatever's mistake with those. You're not driving something 3.5 tons. And then you can go up to the Frisians. Then you can go to a Suffolk. And it broadens our market. And I think one of the things that I keep getting asked all the time is, can I have a Shire, Percheron, and a Suffolk all at the same time? And I think that maybe that's what I will do in the future. Because then I have the ability to show how good the Suffolk is. But I've been toying on the idea for a long time. But it's a bit like goats. We now have 13 different breeds of goats, and we have 40 different breeds of poultry. It doesn't do you any harm to have them, as long as you keep them pure and you know exactly how to manage them and work them.
Well, thank you very much, Daniel. That's most interesting, and I wish you well for the future.
Thank you very much.